This is Joe Zoller from Dove & Croft Partners. This podcast was recorded on Thursday, May 7th, 2020. In it, my colleague Josh Steinauer and I talked to Serge Van Aer, Chief Executive Officer at EVS. This wide-ranging discussion covers a variety of topics that include the company's strategic plan, which it has dubbed Play Forward, the commercial rationale for EVS acquiring Axon, whether remote production, or REMI, is a good thing or a bad thing for EVS, including the commercial viability of Tier 2 and Tier 3 live events, how the global health pandemic and the cancellation of virtually all live events has impacted EVS in terms of both revenue and share price, what the company is planning for in terms of lost revenue in 2020, an even-numbered year, which traditionally has been very strong for EVS, whether the company will reinstate the semi-annual dividend it pays to shareholders, which EVS canceled for the second half of 2020, and whether or not the Axon acquisition was a one-off event or the start of a new strategy that includes strategic M&A. Although this recording is about 45 minutes long, we think it's worth hearing. It's a very candid discussion, and some of Van Aer's answers may surprise you. So let's pick up the conversation. Sir, this is Joe. Thanks for joining us for what I believe is the fourth Dove & Croft podcast. The catalyst for this conversation was the announcement that EVS is going to acquire Axon, and we're keen to jump into the details of that transaction with you shortly. But before we do that, could you just give us and our listeners a brief overview of your background and how you ultimately came to be at EVS?
Okay. Yeah, I'll be happy to do so, Joe. So I have, in the meantime, a career of about 25 years in the broadcast industry. In fact, I started at Belgacom, which is now Proximus, the telecom operator in Belgium. But I was in charge of the satellite services and the broadcast services at Belgacom. So that was the beginning of my career, starting in 92. In 2001, I moved on to Accenture for 2 years in the consultancy business, of course, strategy consultancy. And in 2003, I joined NewTek, with a C, I have to say, because in this industry, we often tend to think about NewTek with a K, but no, it was NewTek with a C. Another Belgian technology company, indeed focusing on developing technologies for satellite communication in the broadcast industry, of course, but also for other type of applications. So I joined in 2003. I became their CEO in 2006. I became an important shareholder of the company as well. And over 10 years time, we did triple the company in size, both in revenues and in a number of colleagues. So we really became a number one, a reference in the industry when it comes to satellite communication. The company was sold to private equity in 2017, and then I left the company and I joined EVS in September last year. So my background is one of broadcast, entrepreneurial growth. That's the kind of background I have. Long time ago, I also did studies for engineer. So I guess I have some technical understanding also of what we're talking about. And I guess that is also helping the situation.
Serge, it's fantastic to get on the phone with you. I guess the way I'd like to frame my first question is we were taken aback at the acquisition announcement because it had been so out of character for EVS. Before I joined Dove & Croft, I was an investment banker and I was always trying to sell businesses to EVS and just getting nowhere. And I think there's only been two deals that EVS has actually done over the past decade. What is now the Divvy Switcher line, which was really more like outsourced R&D, funding that R&D. The second being Open Cube Solutions, which was an MXF toolkit, and that's 2010. So this is 20% of revenue, 20% of employees. Just starting there, is this the first thing that's fallen out of Play Forward? And is this representative of a change in how EVS is going to approach the market?
Well, thank you for those questions. What we do now here is just executing on what we call our Play Forward strategy. When I joined in September last year, we recognized quite rapidly that we had to agree upon our vision of for the future, our objectives, and how we want to get to that. And so with more than 35 colleagues for a few days, over a period of a few weeks, we have synchronized, discussed, and agreed the way forward. We presented our plan to our board of directors that was fully approved, and now we start delivering on that. So effectively, a part of that plan is also for extending our product portfolio and extending those services that we provide to our customers, we agreed that we should look at potential acquisition opportunities. And having Axon in front of us, we definitely saw that this was a very nice fit to what we want to achieve. When we look to the product portfolio of Axon, and when we look to the profile of the company, that fully fits with what we do and is in line with our objectives on the longer term. So in that respect, it was a no-brainer, even in those difficult corona circumstances, to go forward and to close this deal and now to integrate the company. So this is a first. We definitely hope it's not the last one, but we'll see how the market evolves. But we definitely have in our objectives to further strengthen the team by good and complementary acquisitions.
So Serge, if I enthusiastically jump back into the discussion of M&A, it seemed to me as a third-party observer, and maybe you can correct my understanding, but one of the elements that was going on in the market that allowed NewTek to achieve that growth and that very successful exit, I would say, was attaching to the trend of 5G, you know, very big, global, lots of different use cases. When we look at EVS, and not even specific to EVS, but especially for vendors that have been active in the live production environment, there's been an almost wishful thinking or hoping that there was going to be something like UHD or some other element that was going to cause the truck fleet or a lot of the live production to just refresh all their equipment. And I've actually been very impressed with EVS has been very honest that that's not going to happen, or at least it's not going to look like HD did 10 years ago. So I imagine that was discussed in Play Forward. That is one of the reasons why you say, hey, if we want to get the growth that our shareholders expect or maintain our profitability, we have to expand our product portfolio. We have to expand our distribution channels, because there was some commentary like that in the press release. But I'd love for you to help to expand that.
Yeah, well, it's absolutely true. So we are extending our product portfolio, but also on the channel side, we know that there are some opportunities to improve on our side. When we look effectively also to Axon, that now we're taking into the team, when we look to their revenue generation, most of their revenue is being generated through their channels. So definitely we think that on that side, we can look at their practices and see if there are some of their best practices that we can copy or take over and also apply within their EVS group, I would say. So definitely we understand that there are opportunities there, especially when you look to different type of products that we have. We understand that some of those products might be an opportunity to sell more and better through channels than trying to do it all by ourselves. And so we see an opportunity for sure also on the channel side to further improve the way we do business, especially for certain type of products which are going into lower tiers, as we call them, and where indeed you typically talk about smaller productions that we don't access indirect.
Just to continue that thought, Serge, I'm very curious how this was talked about in Play Forward. Again, there's a level of honesty that comes out of the EVS management team that I really applaud, and had some very direct conversations with the team historically. But when you look at those lower tier events, I'm very cynical about how those organizations buy technology versus your traditional NEPs and Game Creeks. How do you profitably reach those opportunities? And then I would also say just how large it is, because I think generally people look and say, wow, there's lots of high schools, there's lots of colleges. But the budget realities there are completely different than something that's benefiting from a professional sports league. So does this mean different products? Does this mean different price points? How do you even think about going down market?
Well, we are very cautious about that. And part of our strategy is making sure to have products that can go into those simplified environments. But we also know we will never be the cheapest in that respect. So even in those environments, we know that our solution will be more on the top of the pyramid in those environments than on the low side. There is no escape to that. And there will always be alternatives which will be much cheaper. And it's absolutely not our objective to try and compete for those. We'll always keep our brand value as being one of the better solutions in the environment that we are serving. Don't expect from us to start price wars or to come with the cheapest solution on the market. That's just not who we are and what we want to provide to our customers.
In that case, Serge, there must be a natural floor because you're not going to go to high schools or town halls. Where do you think that line lies below which you're going to have a difficult time finding those customers?
Well, if indeed we serve those customers, it must be through channels because we have our own sales force. that is serving our customers, which are typically the high-end type of customers. So we cannot use the same Salesforce to access other type of customers, which demand quite some time for much lower revenues, of course. So in that respect, having right distribution partners or channel partners that can integrate our, let's say, for instance, X1 solution into that market, that is something that we really will have to work on in the next weeks and months.
Does that risk that sales channel going into competition with your direct sales force? They must at some point try and service some of the same customers, wouldn't they?
Well, that's what we try to understand. I had in my previous life also a situation where we were going indirect and where at some point in time we introduced an indirect sales channel and set up really some programs to accelerate sales. It's always important to understand what are the objectives of your own salespeople and of your sales channels. What I tried to do in the past, and we'll have to see if we can do the same thing here, is to make sure that there are no conflicts and that our own salespeople also feel that there is an advantage for sales channels to sell. So you have to set up the system in such a way that you don't create competition between your own channels, but where your own salespeople see, in fact, that those channels are an extension of their own activities, of their own sales activities. That's, I think, the objective you have to reach.
One of the challenges you were just talking through, the challenge of how do you get your product portfolio aligned with that market? How do you get your distribution aligned with that market? But I think the third pillar there, and just listening to your most recent earnings call, is how do you then communicate that to analysts and to investors? And that last part's pretty tricky because they have 20, 25 years of enjoying a wonderful business model of EBS, of selling to easily identified customers at very healthy margins. And I thought the commentary was quite honest, saying, you know, that you haven't quite, or at least you're not in a position yet to talk about what this is ultimately going to mean from a financial standpoint. I don't know if part of that play forward, have you started to think through how you're going to communicate that to the investor base?
We know it's not one of our strongest points in explaining our strategy over the last years. So with Play Forward internally, we already tried to synchronize upon our objectives and our view for the future. And out of that, it becomes much easier to talk also to the rest of the market and also to financial people. So to give one example, we added Benoît Quirinen, our SVP strategy, to our talks with the financial market, just to be able to better articulate effectively what we are doing and what our objectives are over the long term. So we recognize that we have to step up and improve our communication and what we communicate to the financial market. And we try to do that. We try to translate what we have internally set forward with our Play Forward strategy. We try indeed to better articulate that also to the outside world.
Serge, perhaps I jumped too forward into Play Forward. Maybe just take a moment to pause. As I understand it, this was a strategy discussion that took place last October, a month after you joined. I've kind of been referencing as if anyone that ever hears this would understand that that took place, but maybe just take it back up. And you started to talk about there why you felt it was necessary, what it is. And I think you've even given guidance to the market. This is probably going to be a 2021 before we see the financial results from this initiative.
Well, that's true. We just now have acquired Axon. So to see the full results of that, that will be in 2021. Definitely, that will be a first result. Of course, 2021, when we look to the current circumstances, will be a special year. Well, typically, the uneven years are the less strong years of the company. This year, with the whole situation with the coronavirus and the lockdown situations in many countries, we definitely will have a different situation with big events being shifted to next year. So we'll expect that part of our revenue that we expected this year is being shifted to next year. So we'll see a different situation that will help to increase revenues for next year. And then acquisitions like Axon will help to increase revenues. And we hope in the meantime that this will also help further increasing our profitability. So not only the revenue side, but also the profitability. And we had very high margins in the past. Those will be under pressure for the future. There is no doubt about that. But our objective is still to increase revenues and make sure that the profitability in absolute figure also increases, of course.
You mentioned those margins. Those margins were exceptional. Right? Like, I mean, 85%+ margin. It's always easier to talk about this when you talk about it with somebody else. And I'm sure as you looked at Axon and evaluating that deal, at least from my vantage point, I always thought Axon had these beautiful software tools that were not being appropriately valued in the market. Like when you looked at, say, their full income statement, the amount of the software revenues was less than the value that customers were getting for it. And often it was monetized through like a passing through associated hardware. Are we stuck in that situation as a supplier community? Or have you started to think through how do we get more appropriate valuing of these software tools? Because I think the same is true in EBS's portfolio. You have these wonderful software tools, but by and large, it's still monetized by moving through physical equipment.
It's a good remark. We generate high margins is thanks to the software that we develop on our hardware. But the way it's being sold to customers is mainly through the hardware, as you rightly point out. But most of our R&D team is indeed software engineers. And indeed, it's a challenge to migrate from that hardware environment to more a software type of an environment. So we definitely have also an objective to translate some of our revenues from a CapEx model to an OpEx model, so to a recurring revenue model. But we don't want to force customers into this. So we leave the choice to customers to go for an OPEX model if they want to do so, of course. So we're very cautious about that, but definitely it's in our objectives and in our strategy map to take more value out of the software that we develop in our products. And we know that there will be over time more and more software only type of products, where today it's mainly combined with hardware. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that this will not stay very important for EVS over the next years, but we know that more and more software only will be sold at some point in time. There is an evolution towards virtualization, towards cloud and things like that. So own hardware is not being delivered, but we would expect that there will still be a very important part of our sales linked to hardware, but that there will be a growth coming heavily from software in the future.
As I think of the challenge there, Serge, and I keep leaning on things you said during your first earnings call, I thought it was quite honest. You were responding to a question from an analyst asking about market sizing in terms of REMI. And Joe and I have even thought about this out loud. If in its purest form, if we move to more REMI at home, remote production approaches to large events, you would see a reduction in the unit volume of equipment that was being purchased by those service providers. And some people could even say, okay, maybe that's a 30% reduction. But I think my point would be, if the business model continues to be CapEx, then clearly there would be revenue implications there. But if the business model were to detach from the physical equipment and start either per use, or as you say, it's in cloud environments, and you could start to better value the software, then perhaps not only is it revenue neutral, but we start to see even revenue gains from those deployments. I think that's probably more than 5 years down the road. I don't actually think that's going to happen next year. So there's two points there. How have you and the team started thinking about what the revenue impact is going to be, and how far away is that in practice?
It's a difficult question to answer, especially with what is happening now. We see indeed that the remote production will definitely accelerate. The question is now, of course, what is remote production? For a long time, we thought that remote production was to do the production in broadcast centers away from the venues. Now, with the current circumstances, when we talk with our customers and when they talk about remote production, they often say, well, that's distributed production with the EVS operators operating from home. While the servers are still in a truck next to the venue, how can they make sure that operators can operate that truck remote from home? So we'll see definitely in the next weeks, months, and years a different type of remote productions. Some customers tell us that they would prefer indeed to keep trucks at the venue and have the operators at home, because even that would help them be much more efficient in the usage of operators, reduce traveling costs. All the traveling that is being done and the waste of time that goes with that is a heavy cost that they could indeed avoid by having people working from home. So we'll see how that evolves, and we'll have to think carefully and make sure first that we help our customers doing that, because that's now a clear request, and we are helping a lot of customers doing that as we speak. But with the launch, by the way, of our new LSM VIA, which we are launching as we speak, we definitely will put more focus on that remote production capability, and even from that distributed production capability with operators working in broadcast centers or from home.
Serge, when you look at what you've done since you've joined the business, whether it's a coincidence or not, it seems that there were a few things that EVS has done under your tenure that it wouldn't have done in the past. So one we talked about was buying Axon for EVS, a sizable M&A deal. You also changed the reporting structure, so I'd like to understand a bit more. You also canceled the dividend at least the second half of the current year, and I'm wondering whether that's going to continue. And I'd also am curious what investor reaction was to the dividend cut. Quite a few questions margins in there, but maybe you have a thought on that.
Well, clearly, we are lucky to be a profitable company and having indeed a lot of resources and a lot of cash in the bank and nearly no loans. So in these circumstances, this is a lucky position to be in, of course, or a fortunate position to be in. This helps us to go through this whole situation with our engines still fully running, meaning that we have all the people on the payroll, that all our engineering, which is half of our personnel, is still working, be it from home, on our products and on our product developments. We continue to support our customers. So we use our financial health to go through this difficult period, expecting that at some point in time, we'll get through this period. The question is, how long is this going to last? Is this going to take a few more weeks or a few more months? So now we hope that in a few more weeks, customers will start up again, that sport events will be produced again, and that we might have a very busy second half of the year. We all hope for that. But the future will tell, of course, what the situation will really be. Now, with this financially healthy situation and with that cash in the bank, we want to invest into our future and prepare ourselves for what comes after this situation, this coronavirus, and make sure that we will be there to help our customers start up again. And in the future, the longer term, help them to optimize their operations, reduce their operational costs. That's the kind of things that we want to provide them further into the future. So having that cash available, we want to use it for things that will really help our future. To come back on the dividend cut for this year, we indeed announced that because, well, we clearly see that our initial revenue guidance, we will not be able to make that. So it's clear that this year will not be the year that we expected. So that's why we took the decision to be prudent and to stop or cancel that dividend payment for this year. I think that like many companies, we try to limit our cash out, and this is a way indeed to stop the cash out. What is the reaction from the shareholders? When I look to the evolution of the share price, when we announced that, I guess a lot of people did expect that, because when we did announce that, we did not see a huge impact on our share price. I think the big impact on our share price took place before that, when major games like the Euro and the Olympic Games were shifted to next year. Then, like the rest of the market, we really took a major hit on our share price. But it was not after we announced our dividend cut, definitely not.
You told us about the way that you are reporting the revenue now. But one of the questions that Josh and I have had for a while, and we've done presentations about this as well, is typically EVS revenue goes up in an even year, down in an odd year. Obviously, this is going to be a unusual year from that perspective. But we have been wondering why the market wasn't moving in the same direction it was since about 2012, and whether or not there's reached a saturation point for EVS products, and whether you are ever going to get back to those 2012 type peaks, at least organically. Obviously, with the Exxon deal, your revenue will go up pro forma, but it seems like maybe there's a natural limit to how many replay servers can be sold by you and absorbed by the market.
Well, that comes back also to the question before about our revenue figures. And we talk about our live service providers and the live audience business. So the live service providers like NAP, Game Creek, and others, indeed, they are heavily under pressure at this moment in time. And there is no doubt that they will reduce the capital expenditure. Well, they have stopped any capital expenditure in most of the cases as we speak now. So it will take some time before we see that coming back again. On the other hand, we have broadcast customers in our live audience business who indeed have a lot of activity at this moment in time, a lot of work with all the news to be covered. So don't underestimate our position in those broadcast centers. We are, of course, very well known for our solutions for our sport, but we have other solutions for news customers as well. And that is picking up and continuing also to generate some good revenue. So we are fortunate to have that source of revenue as well that is continuing as we speak. But for the live service providers, that definitely is hitting them hard at this moment. And I'm sure it will take months before they start picking up or start buying new gear, of course. So we'll see how that evolves. From some of those customers, we hear that due to the fact that sport events might restart, that there might be in certain countries a clash of different sports at the same moment in time, and that indeed there might be a demand for more production at the same time, and that there might be an issue on available resources, both being it human or machine. So we'll see if that becomes reality in the next weeks and months, yes or no. We all hope it does, of course. because it would help our customers to recuperate some of the losses that they have been going through over the last weeks, but will never be sufficient to save the year. I think that for everybody, clearly this year will be a year to forget rapidly, but we are indeed fortunate enough to have a strong balance sheet that can get us through this difficult moment.
Maybe if I could just jump in, Serge. So here we are, it's May 7th. I think Korean baseball has just gone back on air, and really applause to them. Bundesliga is looking at maybe starting up later this month. NFL has released its own 16-game schedule. So some points of optimism of starting back up. I guess the question I have for you is, at this day, what do you think the impact's going to be to budgets for those organizations? Because GameCree has said it publicly. NEP has said it in its debt filings, right? There's really a halt to any CapEx here for the foreseeable future. I would even suspect that we probably have to go a whole event cycle before we see sort of a normal level of CapEx purchases. Is this going to accelerate a view to the OpEx portion of these budgets? Because there's still problems that need to be solved.
Well, we enjoy a very big market share indeed in the OB vans. There is no doubt about that. And so further increase that market share is, when you're so high, that you cannot further increase that. So your chances are indeed it slowly decreases, in fact. So if you want to have revenue growth, you have to go and get that from other applications or with other customers. So it's clear that in 2012 with UHD and the transition to UHD, there was a major investment cycle taking place. Having a similar thing happening again, I think that will be difficult to copy that one, clearly, but it will maybe take place, but over more years, spread over more years, with the introduction of IP, with new standards. The remote production might be also an interesting trigger for some investment cycles in the future, but the waves will probably not be as big. They will be more spread over the years, and we have to indeed manage that and make sure that in the meantime we further extend our product portfolio to still be able to increase our revenues.
Yeah, I guess the question I'm keen to ask you, and don't want to take all of your evening here, Serge, would be, so you're a veteran of the media, trade show circuit, having been in the industry, as you pointed out, for the better part of, say, 25 years. What do those events start to look like in the future, in your estimation? Because I think of the EVS booth at, say, an IBC or an NEB, big booth, lots of eye candy, lots of steak dinners, lots of things you have to touch on the booth. I have to think these are going to look different in the future. And to me, I've been an advocate that they have to cost a lot less. But what do these start to look like? Are there fewer events? In your estimation, are there fewer events? Do we have more modest displays? Or how should we start to think about that?
Well, I think that travel habits will definitely change, and that when we see the kind of demonstrations that we're now able to do remotely, where until a few months we thought that would be difficult to do, definitely in the future we'll be able to do more remote demonstrations of technologies. Those events will continue to exist, but I think that the scale will be less big. Definitely. That also the importance that we give to those events will be less. I think that's just a natural evolution, and that what happens now is a good indication of what we can expect in the future. So I would expect effectively that we'll, and not only we, but other companies as well, will put less focus on those two major big events, but make sure that they have a good coverage, and in the meantime, that they even further increase the interaction with their customers in other ways. Because, hey, we also know that to get attention of our customers during those big events, well, it's not always easy. They have to see that much things at the same moment in time that you have only half an hour or maybe an hour of their time, and then they move on. When I see now the way we interact at this moment in time with customers all around the world, well, this is quite impressive. In the morning, I have calls with customers in Asia, Australia, Japan, Korea, during the day with European customers, and in the evening with US customers, and all that in the same day and really at top level. So this is quite impressive. And we see for ourselves that this is working relatively well.
Any initial customer reaction to the deal that you can share? Is there any tough questions you've had to field?
Well, I'm very happy with the amount of positive feedback we have. So that makes us feel good, of course. That shows that we took a right decision. And so effectively, many people are very positive about this. I think also because they recognize that we are quite similar companies, meaning our core values about being customer-centric, being technology-minded, having the same kind of profiles, a long history, a strong name, good reputation, high reliability of products. We are a very similar company, in fact. So in that respect, people say like, well, yeah, of course, that's an obvious choice. So congratulations. We look forward to keep on doing business or increase business with you this way. So we're very happy with the feedback we get. Yeah.
I can't help myself, Serge. If we could see Joe, I'm sure he'll roll his eyes at me making this statement because Joe's more worldly than I am. But I think especially to any Americans that would listen to this, they probably don't fully appreciate that Belgium and the Netherlands have been separate countries for the better part of 400 years, right? Different religion, different languages, you know, different cultural components. When I was a banker, I always thought the easiest thing was buying the company. The hardest thing was integrating the company. Any kind of initial thoughts on that? The statements in the press release talked about maintaining the R&D center in the Netherlands. Is that still the plan? Sunsetting of the brand. It's a very strong brand in certain areas.
Yeah, well, it's absolutely the objective to keep all colleagues on board. And there is the objective of this transaction is creating synergies, but on the revenue side. And so there will be some synergies on the cost side. And then we refer, in fact, to those big events like IBC and NAB, which indeed are big budgets. But now, indeed, this is a nice way where you can save costs by bringing both companies together on the same booth. But we have no other objectives of cutting costs, and definitely not. It's about synergies, revenue synergies. And when you look to Axon, and they have a very good reputation in Europe, Middle East, Africa, Asia. So the brand is quite well known in those regions of the world. But when you go to the other side of the ocean, North America, Latin America, the brand recognition is close to zero. And that translates also in close to zero sales in that region of the world. So there we are absolutely convinced that with the power of our brand, EVS, and with our presence, our commercial presence, we really can leverage that and we can show to our customers the value of this technology. And that will help us really increase the revenues generated by the Axon products as they are today. And it's true, we changed the brand. So the Axon brand will disappear gradually and it will all become EVS, but we will keep the names of the products like Neuron, like Cerebrum, like Synapse, that will remain. And we'll keep good track of the Axon name in our history timeline, but the brand itself will disappear.
The thing I would say, and maybe this is just registering a comment, I hope to hear, and maybe it's in a year, Yvonne get on a conference call and walk through the returns that have been enjoyed from the acquisition. Because I am suspicious the financial return just from the cost synergies you outlined of going to the same trade shows, going to the same customers, that combination, and the kickup of some revenue synergies you should get. I would expect that to be a much better return for shareholders than is going to be realized through other corporate activities like a dividend or a share buyback. But that's an opinion, but I am suspicious that's what's going to occur in, say, 12, 18 months' time.
Well, I'm an entrepreneur, and I feel that it's better to invest into your future by extending your activities than just by giving back money to shareholders. I'm not absolutely not against that. If we can do so, we will. But it's important that if we had to choose between investing our money into the future of the company by increasing it in size, I'd prefer doing that because over time that will create return for the shareholder, of course. That's a much more longer term proof, I would say, than just paying dividends every year.
I guess, Serge, that begs the question of whether or not you're going to restart the dividend next year.
That's a good question. I don't know. I can answer that. That's a question that we'll have to review with our board, of course, at some point in time. But I would expect that many companies this year will see their results going down heavily and that this will have a big impact on potential dividend payments in the next years. I'm not saying this will be the case for us, but I can imagine many companies will have this year probably not a good year when you talk about revenue and profitability, and that this will have a consequence on dividends that will be paid in the future. But we'll see how that evolves and how we with our board decide to go forward. And I guess it will also be depending on which other opportunities do we see to further strengthen the company and which other acquisition opportunities we will have. Maybe we'll need our cash for doing that. So the future will tell.
You have two believers on this end in that approach.
One question on that, Serge. When you're planning for this year, what are you anticipating in terms of that revenue reduction? You said lots of people are having their revenue go down. We've heard companies say that they're anticipating their revenue is going to be down 30, 40, 50% from the previous year or the previous cycle. How do you think that's going to affect EVS, and what are you planning for internally?
Well, we hope it won't be that dramatic, but I often hear also other companies talking about -20, -30%, and we hope we can limit it to that. But again, the future will tell. What will happen in September, October, if we have a second wave hitting the world, we don't know. So it's difficult to anticipate, but we hope that effectively we can limit damage this year, and that it will be limited to -20, -30, and that it definitely not goes to -50%. Because if it goes that way, that means that a lot of companies will have a very hard time. That will be a worldwide effect, I think, and a lot of companies will be in bad situation and they will just not survive if this happens.
We would agree with that. It's almost a perfect storm for media tech companies. So we're affected too, and we're just as concerned about the entire industry. So I echo what you're saying.
Yeah, and because indeed, Tony, that this is a part of the industry that would just die if it stays like it is now. Huh? Which is unbelievable. We cannot imagine that, of course. Huh? But in worst case scenario, where we would have a second wave of a major corona disease spreading around again, who knows what happens at that moment in time?
Absolutely. You know, saying it ripples through the entire industry, and certainly is, I'm sure, affecting your customers, the big service providers, even more than it's affecting you. We interviewed Pat Sullivan from Game Creek the other week, and he was saying that he's got $300 million worth of equipment sitting in trucks and parking lots, effectively. I would imagine it's the same for Euromedia and the same for NEP and the same for all of those big service providers. It's got to be very, very difficult.
Yeah. Well, we can only hope that sport events start happening again, even behind closed doors, that at least the production can take place and that it can be aired and that people can watch it. But that will really depend country per country, how the business model is allowing this or not. When you have a lot of advertisement, you could do that. But when you have countries who rely upon ticket sales, then that will be a difficult one.
Yeah, a lot to talk through there is why we've taken the opportunity to start the podcast. I am curious, with the break in trying to ship things out the door end of the week, probably every week, more than just, say, rethinking the strategy, have there been any other things you've been able at EVS to take the opportunity to, say, either flush out some products or maybe double down on certain R&D initiatives or retooling of sales? Is there anything just that's top of mind that this pause has allowed you to take advantage?
Well, first, we did the acquisition, and so it sounds strange, but it's...
Yeah, I guess...
I think not that many companies would have the possibility to do this. This helped us really to go in details in the due diligence because that takes time, of course. And so it gave us, strangely enough, some time to focus on that. And now it also helps us to make sure that we engineer the combination of our both companies in a good way. So the integration of the teams, because that will be a key to the success of this acquisition, of course, and making sure that the teams are well integrated, that everybody feels at home, that everybody feels that he has a future in the new EVS. That is something that we really have been working hard on already over the last weeks, and that now with the deal announced that many colleagues can work on. And so that definitely at this moment in time for us, the situation gives us some time, if I may say it like that, to fully work on that integration and make sure that it's being done in the right way, of course.
I'm about a dry well at this point, Joe. I don't know if you had any more questions. This has been delightful, though.
Josh, I've never heard you as a dry well for questions in this type of thing. What you just said, Serge, I think it's really interesting because the fact that you did do a substantial M&A deal is a testament to how well EVS has done as a company and the fact that you have cash. Because when you look around at other deals that are happening or were happening or in the process of it in our industry or elsewhere, they've all ground to a halt. So I think that's interesting. And I wonder whether we should be thinking about the Exxon deal as a one-off event, or are you planning on doing more M&A? Because as I said before, typically you've done pretty small acquisitions and you spend a lot of money buying your stock back, which you talked about previously as maybe want to invest more in the company. So are you considering more M&A? Is that something the industry should be looking out for?
Yes, it's part of our strategy. So we prepare ourselves to do 1 to 2 acquisitions per year. So that is what we think will happen. The question is, will we find the right complementary companies to deliver upon our strategy? That's another question. But yes, the answer to your question is in a big yes. And we make this a part of our company. This capability of acquiring and integrating companies into EVS, that's a clear vision of our future.
When people hear you saying that, you should be prepared for your phone to start ringing.
And he rings. But this is the only way to look at opportunities and select the right ones. So I'm really convinced that this is the way to go forward. And as I said before, we also did some reshuffling in the management team. At the end of December, we announced our leadership team. So we have 6 colleagues managing the company. We also had one colleague being promoted to SVP strategy, where one of his major objectives is define and maintain an industry radar so that we can understand, okay, who could be of potential interest for us. And then to potentially do proactive moves in that respect. So definitely it's part of our objectives. And one colleague has that clearly in his daily tasks. But I will immediately add to that, that we are very cautious about that. Huh? So we will never do a major deal where we will risk the house. That's not what we want to do. But assume that we have 100 million to spend over the next years. We'll prefer to do 5 deals of 20 million than one big deal of 100 million. So let me say it like that. And we also always look at complementary solutions or companies and never to competitors, because we know that trying to acquire competitors is just very painful. And then you have to start cleaning up to generate the cost synergies you can achieve. And that's not what we like to do. We like to build and to grow. And to bolt on a complementary solution. So.
I guess I can't help myself jumping in, but you're absolutely right. In the history of our industry, when you buy a competitor, eventually you have to make some tough decisions. And those tough decisions usually mean having to rationalize certain management individuals, and they just go off and start the same exact business. And it becomes very difficult to look in the mirror and say, what did I actually buy with that deal? Because I didn't get the team, right? Because I already had a team. I would applaud that that statement, Serge.
Yeah. Well, hey, I think it's much easier to buy complementary companies than competitors, for sure. Huh? It gives a much more enthusiastic feeling to everybody. And when I see now the reaction of the Exxon colleagues and of my own colleagues, You feel the energy that is being released. And you see the hope of doing more together. If you were just acquiring a competitor, this is a completely different story. And then you know that you will have to take some tough decisions and people will be afraid for losing their job, of course. But that's part of that kind of acquisition.
So we promised this is the last one, Serge. Is there anything we should have asked you or that you'd like to share about the future of EVS or the industry? Yeah.
Well, I think our objective is, when we talk about strategy, typically, and there are some theories that say that you have to choose between 3 directions, or you are a very efficient company, so able to make low-cost products at high volumes. So you focus really on efficiency. The other one is product leadership is an important way to go. And the third one is customer intimacy. So making sure that you deliver to your customers what they really need. And although we are a very product-oriented company, the real focus or the real strategy that we follow is one of customer intimacy. I had a conversation with one of the founders some months ago and I asked him, well, Pierre, what is the real success of EVS? And he told me, well, strangely enough, it's not about our technology, but it's the fact that we do what our customers ask us to do. And okay, it's about technology that we deliver them, but we listen to carefully to our customers and we deliver them what they ask from us. And that's really one of the secrets of the success of the company. And we want to continue doing that, making sure that we listen to our customers. We provide them, of course, that very reliable type of technology and that we help them going forward so that they can be more successful into the future. So it's really about customer intimacy. And that's something that we really will continue focusing on.
I think that's a great way to end. We really appreciate the time, Serge. This has been fascinating. We appreciate the candor as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Serge.